Thanks for listening to another Moment That Matters podcast from Belmont University's Institute for Innovative Faith-Based Leadership, located here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Dr. John Roebuck, Executive Director of the Institute. It's my joy to host these weekly podcasts. As always, they are being recorded at the Malloy Studios, which are part of the Mike Curb College of Entertainment and Music Business here on the campus of Belmont University. I'm not sure when you're listening to this podcast, but we're recording the podcast the week of Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is that wonderful American holiday where we gather with family and friends, we eat, we watch football, and hopefully sometime during the day we express thanks to God for all that He's done. But I was thinking about the American holiday and thinking about the recent election and how so much talk is in the news and in social media about God and country and the place of our faith in the midst of all that's going on. And so I thought that today we would spend a few minutes talking a little bit on that theme of how do we weave faith and politic and how does that balance in our life. And let me begin by confessing gladly that I really do love this land. I really do. I think America is a land upon which God has indeed shed His grace. It's a land blessed with prosperity and opportunity and strength and success. It's the land of the free, the home of the brave. America possesses this unbridled spirit. It's a land of enormous freedoms and mind-boggling democracy. In America, we are free to worship and we're free to work and free to vote and free to choose our vocation. We're free to live where we choose and free to educate our children in the way that we see fit. We're free to travel throughout the land and free to speak. And so no one can really doubt for a moment the greatness of our nation. In fact, I've had the opportunity during my lifetime to travel the world. I have been to 19 different nations, some of them more than once. I have seen how other people live. I have traveled to poor nations that struggle to offer even the basic necessities of life to their citizens. I have been to places where freedoms were severely limited, where people were oppressed and lived in fear. I have seen in some of those nations a lack of abundance, a lack of prosperity. I have seen the lack of goods and services, the absence of good roads and strong houses and well-equipped schools and hospitals. You know, every time I go on one of those journeys, even to the places in Europe where there's a higher standard of living, there's not a single time that I don't come home after my flight touches down the American soil and I thank the Lord for letting me live in this place. In fact, I remember traveling to Brazil and about a decade ago with some folks from our church. The experience was wonderful. The weather was great. The food was good. The people were hospitable. But when the plane touched down in Atlanta, we clapped our hands and we raised our voices because we were once again in America. So I do love this land. I have always attempted to be a loyal American. I have paid my taxes gladly. I have prayed tirelessly. I have voted consistently. I have supported worthy organizations. I have volunteered my time. I have tried to enrich this land in which we live. I've been one of those that has saluted the flag and wept over soldiers lost, and you've done the same. No one has told any of us that we have to do those things. We do them because it's what we should do with the gratitude in our hearts for the nation in which we live. I hope you have had a chance to see and experience much of America. Maybe you have stood atop Stone Mountain in Georgia or climbed the red clay hills of Appalachia. Maybe you've looked out across the Grand Canyon or ridden up the Gateway Arch. I would encourage you to go to places like Philadelphia and see the Liberty Bell as it hangs in Independence Hall, or stand in awe as you gaze at the Grand Tetons. Consider the vastness of the Great Lakes or spend an autumn day in the woods of Maine. Ski the slopes of the Rockies or bask in the sunlit afternoon in a South Florida beach. Or go walk the cornfields of the Midwest or step onto the black sand beaches of Maui. Study the faces on Mount Rushmore or consider the skyline of Manhattan. You can eat a hot dog at Coney Island or watch the horses run in Kentucky. Go fishing in Louisiana, backpack along the Blue Ridge Mountains. Anywhere you go, you will be reminded that this is a good land, a great land in which we live. I have to admit that I've always been somewhat of a sucker for the red, white, and blue. The very first writing contest I ever won was in the fifth grade. I wrote an essay, What My Flag Means to Me. I won the Kiwanis Club's annual event. When I was young, I also used to tape small American flags to the handlebars of my bike, and I would ride up and down the street like a policeman leading a parade. In my dorm room, both in college and then in seminary, I covered one entire wall with a huge flag that once draped the casket of a soldier from my hometown that was killed in Vietnam. A few years ago, I had volunteered to help out with a program at my son's high school in Franklin. The Centennial Marching Band places flags all around the community on all the major patriotic holidays. I gladly volunteered until I discovered I had to be out at 5 a.m., but anyway, on July the 4th, I was stumbling my way around the neighborhoods, planting those flags into the ground. And as the sun began to rise and the breeze began to unfurl the flags, there was a lump in my throat and a tear in my eye. I thought, what a great place in which we live. And what a great people. America is a melting pot of immigrants who have come to these shores from 100 different places. We have blended ourselves into one great people. We have come from different races and backgrounds, different ethnicities and religions, distant lands and various regions. We are black and white and Hispanic and Asian. We are Catholic and Protestant and Jewish and Muslim. We live side by side. We value our diversity. We celebrate our cultures. We respect our neighbors. Why would we want to live anywhere else? And so on this Thanksgiving week, I want to challenge you to do as I do and to really love this land and to rejoice in your freedoms and to honor those who have forged this land on the anvil of service to country and dedication to family. But really today, my challenge goes a little deeper. In the midst of our patriotism and civic pride, in the waving of the flag and in the beating of the drums of liberty, let us not lose sight for a moment that as Christians, our highest allegiance is not to this country, but to God. Let us not lose sight of the real object of our worship. If we are called to love country, then we are challenged to exalt our God. To exalt is to raise to a higher rank. It is to lift to the position of greater power. We love our country, sure, but we exalt our God. I wonder if we sometimes confuse which should carry the greater admiration. The psalmist in Psalm 33, verses 6 through 12, writes these words, "By the word of the Lord the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth all of their hosts. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of God. For he spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. The Lord nullifies the counsel of the nations. He frustrates the plans of the peoples. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people whom he has chosen as his own inheritance." So let's understand clearly this afternoon that God alone is worthy to be praised. He is to be exalted. He created this land and all that is in it. And knowing that, how can we revere the gift more than the one who brought it into being? So let's be careful when we talk about God and country as though the two stand on equal ground. They do not. It is always God and then country. And to confuse the order of those two things is to create an idol of unimaginable evil. So I do challenge you to love the country, love it passionately and earnestly and devotedly, but love your God even more. To say that we love God supremely is to say that as much as we love this land, we would gladly give it up before we would surrender our hold on the living God. Love of God must outstrip all other devotion, all other allegiance, all other honor. My fear, however, is that sometimes we tend to blur the lines in where our ultimate loyalties tend to rest. And let me give you a little story to illustrate that. In my former pastorate, in our sanctuary, like many sanctuaries across the nation, we had symbols that maybe displayed a little confusion over that which we were to worship. Because displayed in our sanctuary, to my right, in the place of honor, is the American flag, right? It was there every week. It was a symbol of our nation. And as I would look upon it, I would hope that I would be reminded to pray for the nation it represents. But here's what happened. A few years ago, we used that same flag in another part of the building for Vacation Bible School. At the end of the week, it was inadvertently left in the fellowship hall, was not returned to the spot in the sanctuary where it always is. It was not there when we gathered for worship, and so by the end of that day, I had received two angry emails and one phone call, people asking, where is the flag? Have we made some decision? Have we made some hidden agenda not to put it back in the sanctuary? So consider that story and then couple it with this one. About 3.5 years before that event, Our church was involved in a renovation process of that same room, that sanctuary where we worship. And we had to vacate the room. We had to completely gut and strip the room of all furniture, carpet, and pews. Scaffolding was built to cover every inch from floor to ceiling, from front to back. And so in the midst of the chaos of that demolition, I was concerned about a particular item that used to rest on the communion table at the very front of the church, and I'm talking about the big, huge pulpit Bible. We put it right in front of the pulpit on the communion table to remind ourselves every week of the prominence of God's Word. And so I moved it. I thought it was too important to be left to some worker's discretion about where to place it, and so I carefully walked it down the hall to a room that we called the History and Archives Room, just beyond where my office was located. In that room, we kept all the old photographs and historical documents and various items of memorabilia. And so I put it on a table in the center of that room. And then I began to wait, and I didn't put it back in the week we moved back in. I was waiting for someone to ask about the Bible. Then I waited for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks turned into a month. And then a second month rolled by, and then a third month. Finally, 44 months later, over 1,300 days later, a little lady came up in the church and she said, "Where's that Bible that we used to have in the front of the sanctuary?" That was a good question to ask. It made me consider if there's confusion concerning the object of our worship. The flag was gone for one service and people panicked. The Bible was gone for 44 months. Nobody noticed. Again, the psalmist writes, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." You know, if we're not careful, we can have a lot of gods. We can bow to a lot of idols. But God's Word says there can be only one God and no idol, no other gods. And so worshiping God has to be in the center of our focus. There can only be one God, only one Lord, and the scriptures say, "Blessed is the nation whose focus is not on itself, but on the God who created it." I grew up a Baptist in that tradition. Baptists have always attempted to keep clearly that separation of loyalty, that separation between church and state. Now, obviously, the two are connected. It is the state, by its laws and defense, which guarantees the right of the citizen to have the freedom to worship. It is not the place of the state, however, to dictate how we worship or even whom we worship. And so let me quote from the 1963 Baptist Faith and Message, a document about what Baptists believe. It says something about church and state. This is what it says. "Church and state are mutually related in the normal affairs of life. The state provides a favorable atmosphere in which the church can do its work, such as fire and police protection, national security, postal service, roads and streets, general social stability. And the churches, in turn, should produce through the gospel the type of Christian citizens which will contribute to a stable social order." Going further, the statement says, "At the same time, church and state are mutually exclusive. Neither should seek to control the other or to use it in fulfilling its particular role. Neither should propose to tell the other how to discharge its responsibility. The church should not seek to use the state for its purposes. The state should not commandeer the church for political ends. The state should not favor one religion over another." Again, I'm quoting from the Baptist Faith and Message, the 1963 and 2000 versions. It's interesting what we have done in saying we believe in a separation of church and state, and yet sometimes we don't really know how to create a distance. George Shultz was Secretary of State during the Reagan administration. He kept a large globe in the corner of his office. When newly appointed ambassadors would interview with him as they left the office on their way to their places of service, Shultz would say to them, "You have to go over to that globe and prove to me that you can identify your country." And they would spin the globe and they would put their finger on the country to which they were sent. Without fail, every ambassador did exactly the same thing. Until one day. One day, Shultz's old friend and former Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield was appointed as an ambassador to Japan, and he was put to the test. This time, however, Ambassador Mansfield spun the globe and put his hand on the United States, and he said, "That's my country." And Shultz changed his outgoing charge from that day forward. To the new ambassadors, pointing to the land they would serve, he would say, "Never forget that you're over there in that country, but your real country is the U.S. I don't want you to ever forget for a moment that your country is this land. This is the place where you should love and defend and protect. But I also don't want you to forget for a moment that the Lord God is what you must love supremely. He is the object of worship. He alone is the one who gives you life and the one who has allowed you to live in this land. So love your country, but exalt your God." Now, most of us know and we understand how to love our land. We know what's involved in patriotic citizenship. We understand the duties of living peacefully and responsibly and loyally. But what is demanded of us if we are to exalt our God? How do we demonstrate to Him that His name is the name above all names? Exalting God is more than the simple praise of our lips. It is faith turned to action. God is exalted when we take seriously the demands to love our enemies and to pray for our persecutors. God is exalted when we strive for peace and when we are grieved by war. God is exalted when we love unconditionally and forgive abundantly. God is exalted when we serve faithfully and give sacrificially. God is exalted when we obey completely and share faith radically. God is exalted when we are willing to raise the banner of faith in our lives each morning as quickly as we would raise the flag in our front yard. God is exalted when we defend and protect His Word. God is exalted when we convey His message not through coercion or belligerent words, but through quiet grace and genuine compassion. God is exalted when we feed the hungry, when we clothe the naked, when we lift up the downtrodden. God is exalted when the first thing said of each of us is not that we are great citizens of this land, but that we are great citizens of His kingdom. This is Thanksgiving week, as I said earlier, and there is a lot for which we should be grateful. And I would hope that as you go through this week or whenever you're listening to the podcast and you begin to count your blessings, I hope you would realize what a joy it is to be in this land because the one who created this land has placed you here. So let's be thankful. Let's love our country, yes. But let's be sure to exalt our God. Thanks again for listening and for downloading the podcast. Thank you for listening to A Moment That Matters from Belmont University's Institute for Innovative, Faith-Based Leadership.